Well, hello, superstars, and welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Danny Katz. Today, I am joined by Joel Schaefer. Joel is a mentor and a guide. His expertise lies in the realm of shamanism, Toltec wisdom, the Carlos Castaneda teachings, the reclaiming of shadows. We had a really juicy, deep, soulful conversation that I know you're going to enjoy. Before we dive in, I am reminding you to and thanking you for clicking that subscribe button, for liking, sharing, commenting. As you are listening on an audio podcast platform, thank you so much for leaving me a review, hopefully 5 stars. All these things really go the distance in helping me get the word out farther and wider. Also reminding you to sign up for my newsletter at dannykatz.com. It is the very best way to ensure that we stay in touch. And as I am narrowing my focus and my energetic output with the ultimate goal of getting rid of all of the ancillary platforms, dannykatz.com is the best way to track everything that I am doing. Before we dive into today's show, I do want to give a little plug to Brain Supreme. Joel actually mentioned Brain Supreme right when we started recording because he's microdosing on their genius blend right now, as am I. And as a longtime microdoser, I was actually microdosing before the term was a thing back when I was in grad school and I was dealing with insomnia. So I thought, well, as long as I'm up, I might as well take a quarter tab of acid and take all my IKEA furniture apart. Now, I trust that these days you and me and all of us are doing much wiser, more constructive things during our microdosing, and Brain Supreme is like tippy top of the line in terms of microdose products. Adam Schell has put together these incredible formulations with tonic herbs and, you know, the just right amounts of supplementation mixed in with the secret sauce to help us perform better, you know, at the gym, on the racquetball court, to amplify our cognitive skills, our productivity. So I highly, highly, highly recommend scoping out the entire Brain Supreme line. I will leave a link in the show description because I love their products. And I would love you to also glean the benefits that both Joel and I are gleaning from this phenomenal microdosing supplement. All right, that does it for housekeeping. Buckle up and prepare to enjoy my conversation with Joel Schaefer. Joel Schaefer, hi, nice to see you.
Hi, Danny. Good to be with you. How are you today?
I'm well, thank you. How are these first inklings of summer treating you?
It's been really good. I happen to be microdosing off Brain Supreme right now for the beginning of summer. It's been really good product.
Oh, nice. Which are you doing? The Genius, the Black Stack?
Yeah, he sent me the Genius. I'm going to go on his channel and talk about it because Mark Gober recommended that him and I talk. And so I'm excited to go on his podcast and talk about his product.
That's so funny because he's the one who recommended that I talk to Mark Gober.
Yeah, that's so cool.
His products are amazing, though. I took the Genius yesterday and I was so productive, so focused. Got so much done.
Yeah, I'm loving it. I usually just microdose myself very like just based on how much I think by just holding it in my hand, like the actual mushroom. So it's nice having somebody that created a really clean product and tells me exactly kind of what to do. Cause I don't know, it seems a little more dialed in. I'm really loving it.
Nice. Awesome. Well, that psychedelic seems like a great way to start. Yeah. It seems like they've been a big part of your spiritual path, your journey. When did you first not just connect with psychedelics, but recognize that there was more to just like partying and that they were, you know, a pathway for you?
Yeah. I mean, the first time I took LSD, I felt that it wasn't a drug, that the drug had just led me to a more ideal way of perceiving the world. And so I intuited that right away that there was something about this. And that's been my whole goal ever since, is to find a way to get there without having to take anything. So I've been studying with people that claim to do that, or, trying to find ways to do that myself. But I still find myself doing both. But yeah, I mean, I kind of did it all in cycles. Like, for a while, it was a really clean relationship. And then for a while, we were just taking it so we could drink more. You know, there was just stages of intensity of different. I was selling it to like lots of like older gangsters. And it was just a time of lots of adventuring. You know, I hung out with a lot of schizophrenic people. I kind of kept them out of jail and they kept me entertained. It was sort of like a mutual understanding that I could babysit them and they would teach me about telepathy and otherworldly kind of ways of interacting with perception. Because most schizophrenic people are just shamanic. They just don't have the training, right? And so they're interacting with the other layers of the onion in a way that's totally dysfunctional. But there potentially is a way for them to figure out how to reestablish their perceptual capacity and then, re-enter those states without it being overwhelming. So I'm just been exploring it a long time. I did it. So from 13 to 16, I was doing a little bit of both, partying, but also using it in a sacred way. And then I met a shaman at 16 that really taught me about the castaneda material. And we started using mushrooms very intentionally. And we would do very extreme things like take lots of mushrooms over and over for multiple days with heavy cannabis use. And then all of a sudden we'd stop the cannabis and just go full blast with the mushrooms and then stop all the mushrooms all at once and just go celibate, sober, just shut it all down. And it would just boost us into like a permanent mushroom state by going with such heavy doses so intentionally that we were just saturated in that for a long time. So I learned to live in that state for periods of time. And unless I went back to the cannabis, I would stay in that mushroom-like awareness. But the cannabis would sort of jack it. It would pull me back into like patterns that weren't as expansive. Cannabis lends you a bunch of dreaming energy, but that it also keeps you from having dreams or having as lucid of dreams. So it's kind of a tricky one to work with as well.
There's so much there. Let's unpack little bits. So I shared a similar, I didn't try any intoxicants until I was in graduate school in my 20s.
Cool.
And the first medicine I took was LSD.
Yeah.
And my first thought was like, oh, okay, I'm gonna be okay in this realm. Now that I know that this is an option and that this exists, like I can do this earth thing. So when you say that you were doing high doses of mushrooms in your teens, were you lucid? Were you able to like do schoolwork and like hang out with your parents?
This was like I was struggling, I was pretty much walking away from society and school and my parents and choosing to be in the woods instead. I dropped out as a junior to go hike in the Rocky Mountains with like 80 pounds on my back with this shaman and some other people. I came back a year later and my counselor just let me fill in my grades as if I didn't miss school. Like just the universe just took care of me like that and always has. Whether it's police or whatever, I've always just been protected in that way. I had a really high IQ. I was crushing it in school. So it wasn't like I was concerned that I wouldn't make it in the world. I recognized that school was actually indoctrination pretty young. I didn't think of it as an education. So I wasn't in fear. I was afraid of not keeping up with my teacher. I was in a cult, basically, like this, if you don't keep up with me, you're going to get left behind. I thought he was the only one that knew this stuff. I was really like in a young perception in that respect, like terrified of not making it, like religious kind of stuff. But yeah, I just was able to somehow function though. There were scary times where I didn't remember my name. I had moved away from Seattle and was living in Missoula for a while, and we were spending so much time in the woods and losing our identity, that it was just I was not like in a functional place for a little bit, and it was scary as hell, but I was able to practice the Castaneda teachings and sort of get my strength back. So I did manage to graduate high school eventually, and I did, things like that, and I got into construction pretty young, so I was able to do I was still able to sort of keep that party lifestyle or that alternate lifestyle while building stuff, because we didn't think of construction as work. We really enjoyed it. You get to build stuff, you get to see it go up, you can yell and scream, and nobody's kind of like, so it felt very wild and powerful.
Looking back on that time, do you think it was a wise move to be engaging so heavily with psychedelics while your brain was still developing?
I'm open to the idea that it could have been done in a different way, and it would have, been more ideal. But I just don't look at it like that. I think everything that I feel really fortunate to be where I'm at, and I credit a lot of that work that I did then as to why I'm able to do what I do now. So I do, there were times where I felt that I was in a dangerous place because of it. And but that was my death informing me to stop and to take breaks and to heal, and I listened. But I don't look at it like, I just didn't have the tools or the boundaries really to say no. And that I take responsibility for that, and I'm open to the idea that I wouldn't recommend this way of doing things to others. Sure. So there's just that kind of concept is tricky to talk about.
I understand. When you say your death was speaking to you, do you mean like your inevitable exit from this realm, or does that mean something different?
Yeah, the Toltecs say that our death is it's with us, it's stalking us. It's an actual force, and that they say that death is the player and life is the arena. Right. So it's because we're in this inevitable death process, and because it could happen at any moment, that's what spurs us. But we don't really talk about it. And in fact, we behave as if we're immortal. But if we were to behave as if we're like Toltecs say, the difference between them and others is that they are beings who are going to die, and they're aware of it. And so they treat every day as if it's their last, and they only do the things that they believe are going to ensure that they have an afterlife experience that's meaningful. They believe that you can continue with your awareness at death, but you have very specific things that need to be cleaned up in order for that to happen. And so that's their focus of their training, is to have an alternative form of dying.
And is that something that you have adopted as well?
I practice the recapitulation in order to, so our memories will flash before our eyes when we die, according to the Toltecs, based on what they witness when they see people die, because they've learned to see energy, supposedly. And they observe these memories all come out of us. Like they're just stored like inventory, and it just becomes like a Rolodex, and you have access to everything that ever happened to you. There's a way to get to that inventory without dying. And that's their focus.
So I once ghost wrote a book for an African spirit shaman named Derek Verrett, and he spoke about he had a 4.5 minute death experience. So he spoke of seeing similar the memories and the Rolodex, and how important it was to practice titrating into the difficult memories such that they didn't have triggers or that we could remain neutral. Is that similar to what the Toltecs are doing?
So you basically you there's a type of breathing where you go back into as many memories as you can gain access to, and you take your energy back that you left there, and you give back any energy you took, like little energy splinters you might have picked up from people if they were projecting onto you, or you had sex with them, or all kinds of things to clean up. And it's not negative, it's just cleanup. It's just, this is mine and that's yours, and I shouldn't have given you all this, and I shouldn't have taken all that. And but it is very intense, and you feel acidic memory coming out your mouth on the exhale, like you're purging. And then you get lighter and lighter and lighter the more you do this breath work, because you're no longer carrying the baggage of the past, but you're not going back there necessarily to dwell on it. You're sort of tiptoeing into your past, not spending too much time there, just the right amount. And then it's like eventually the memories feel like someone else's, like you're a witness inside of an avatar that's just kind of realizing you've had many lifetimes. Toltecs say they're all parallel, though. There's not one after the other. And that this linear concept that we're in is very limiting. And so when you recapitulate, you feel otherworldly and you feel timeless. You feel your past is present and your future is present. You can have deja vu experiences that are so profound that you validate that that future has already happened and that we're inside of some sort of memory. And then you have access to your memories in a way that you could have never before. So all these childhood feelings you forgot all about, you literally have to take a knee. You'll be walking down the street and a memory will come up that's so strong that it's hard to hold on to this world. Pulls you deeply into it. But that's how the healing happens, is your youthful energy comes back.
So one thing that I noticed around like the whole COVID nonsense and the people who bought into it seemed to be that a lot of the people who bought into it were operating with a pretty pronounced fear of death, and that was controlling them. So I'm curious to know like how your worldview changed as you stepped into this recapitulation practice or this kind of Toltec perspective and practice around death.
I mean, so when you become more aware of your death and feel its presence, you know, they say death is the only advisor that will be honest with you. And so you get like, you know, like, and if you turn to your death and you ask it a question, it'll say, "This is nothing. I've yet to touch you." You know, and so you become conscious of this force and you start to respect it. And that's what makes you fearless, is that you're not avoiding this intensity. You're turning and facing the thing. And it respects you for it and you respect yourself for it. So you learn to sit in the dark. And instead of distract yourself from boredom, you just sit in the intensity of not distracting yourself. And there's a whole world on the other side. You know, I can stare at the dark and all these colors start to show up. And I have to breathe quicker and quicker because they're starting to take form, shapes and symbols. I've even seen writing, words being written. You know, the Tibetan monks do this in caves, but I can do this in my bedroom because it's not that hard. I don't have to fly across the world and take a power plant in order to do it. It's just sitting through my boredom until I pop out the other side. But no, most people just don't know about these things. And so you become more and more, it's like you become reverent for your life, but you also become irreverent at the same time because you have to make fun of yourself in order to get here. No, it's if you're taking it seriously, there's a lot of sorcery people out there that are really like think they're the special one or whatever. And so this stuff is dangerous to get into because you'll start to think illusions of grandeur once you have breakthroughs. That's why the Castaneda material is helpful to read, because it's a very it helps you realize how dangerous this anything is in life. You could get trapped in money or focused, obsessed with sex. You could get obsessed with power, you know, and for any man that moves into his power, he's going to be tested. Whether he's going to be either, you know, and it's usually one or the other, money, power, or sex, that ends up keeping him from healing and really becoming liberated. And so it's just part of the journey is recognizing that it's very difficult to advance because the program that most people are still in, like a junior high program, why they fell for COVID. They're just like, oh, you know, this is just what's going on. They've never looked beyond the basic childhood. They're just adult, they're kids in adult bodies. So the Toltecs say that program, once you get past one layer, it just adjusts itself and gets more creative on how to control you. So it'll try to make you think if you're no longer a victim, it'll make you think you're a victor now, that you're above. If there's a way to stay neutral where you don't put yourself above anyone or below anyone, and that's really hard to stay in, especially if you're at odds with the people who fell for it. But
Absolutely.
I believe they're meant to do what they're doing, and we're meant to do what we're doing, and that it doesn't need to go any differently than it is, that only very few people in this realm evolve at a time. And that those people that are not evolving are a buffer, and the forces that feed off of people have something to feed off, so we get to be left alone.
That's it. I haven't heard this theory before. So that by design, there are people who are opting out of evolving in this incarnation.
In another incarnation, they too will have opportunities, but there's just so many of us at a time, and it's actually designed this way, you know, as a means to create the perfect obstacle course. Because what people call NPCs, they're not exactly NPCs. If a near-death experience were to happen, they could be awakened, right? So it just depends, and you never know. And it's just a matter of being your most impeccable best to be of service if that were to happen, but not to be at odds with them for not being able to do that, because they're just scared. They sense the evil that is behind the lies, and so they don't want to become aware because they're terrified of something they're afraid of that they can't speak to. You and I are courageous enough in this lifetime to be able to like ask the question. And that's very liberating for us. And so they must be suffering, right? And if we can have compassion for that suffering, then we won't be get into a spiritual war with them or get caught in any of that.
Yeah, I'm in the habit of even like, instead of, you know, they're the ones who got the vax, is like some of us opted to and some of us didn't. Some of us are confused. Some of us are still waking up to it, and to keep it under that umbrella of the us, because I'm still training myself to hold that unity, you know, and to hold that compassion, because it's been so chaotic, the whole situation.
It's very disturbing. And that's what the Toltecs discovered, is that this is a world of terror and beauty.
Yeah.
The beauty balances the terror. So for us to connect to the Earth Mother, for us to have connection to the rain and the wind and the sun and the elements, and to be truly healed, will make it possible to face more and more of what needs to be looked at.
So from your perspective, and, you know, obviously your closeness with the Toltec tradition, is what we're living through like baked in, totally earthly, totally natural, no weird like interdimensional co-opting, like this is just how the earth game goes?
No, there is a non-human force that arrived here and is lent us its mind, and we are basically being harvested like animals. And it's a real predicament. But we can't save others. We can only save ourselves. It's a personal process. And if you stay attached to the theater of the world in a way that hijacks your perception, then you won't be able to go inward enough to get silent enough to be able to reset your field and to no longer feed these forces. So I'm still getting fed off. I'm going to have to get really, really strong in order to no longer be affected by these forces. But when I, go ahead.
How are they getting in with you?
Just the any me moments, you know, where like I'm like a little wounded kid that wants my wife to like give me something that she's not, or, you know, I go into like romantic conflict and I become a rebel teen, and I blame her as if she's my mom because of whatever power dynamic we're in. Like, I'm still a wounded person. And that mostly shows up inside of relationships. I don't really know that part about me when I'm by myself.
Right. That's kind of the trap of solitude, is like, we've so got it together.
Totally. Yeah. Shamans often prefer to be alone their whole life because of it's so difficult. And they're very disciplined, and it's very difficult the amount of time a relationship takes. They just don't give them, they don't believe they have enough time for that. So it's a really difficult trade-off, but very few people pull off the balance where you get to do both.
Do you consider yourself a shaman?
I don't. I'm just a student of shamans, but I can connect people to shamans. I actually help other shamans because I've worked with so many that I can help them to see the areas in which they don't know about. And I'm not saying I won't ever refer to myself that way at some point. There enough breakthroughs occur, or if enough ego death were to occur, I could maybe be willing to use that word. But I believe everyone is shamanic in nature, that we're all dreamers capable of witnessing eternity while awake and asleep, and that we're actually more asleep right now in this dream than in the deeper layers, that you could learn to control your dreams and go into real worlds that are not illusionary based. This one is like a, it's an inversion. There's something about this place. It's deception based, that the way it's been, the way our perception of it is perceived, because we're not using our natural mind. We're using this foreign mind to interact in the world. And that foreign installation is helpful to drive 100 miles an hour alongside other cars. It's like there's something good or beneficial to having this thing that sort of keeps it all going. But you're gonna, it's kind of like in the movie The Matrix, you have to come to terms with the architect. You have to be under, like when Neo was saying, well, he's talking to the architect and he said, this is the same thing you say every time, right? We've done this over and over and over. It's eternal. But there's a way to potentially break out of that circle, like as an individual and as a collective. So I think we're in a time where if we don't discover the secrets of perception, things are going to get really difficult. And so therefore, with our, when our backs are against the wall, we're going to discover resources that we've always had, but we didn't have the catalyst to access, that we didn't have enough reason to really get to know that capacity.
Was this world an inversion before the invasion?
No, things were really, really magical, and we were traveling in different worlds. We were dreamers that could walk like from one world to another layer, like other realities, other dimensions, but it was still a world of power. So you had to be able to have, like, it was like being wild. And if you were a domesticated animal that got sent out in the wild, you wouldn't last a day. So like if we got sent back into that time right now, you know, we wouldn't make it because we'd become domesticated. But yeah, it's through civilization, through, you know, like we would not have done this if we were naturally not interfered with. We wouldn't have built all these cities the way that they did. And it's all the mind, it's a mind virus, and it comes from a predator that they call the flyers.
Ooh, can you tell me more about the flyers?
Yeah, they're just a being that. So we have a luminous cocoon that surrounds our physical form, and there's this film, an energetic film that can wrap up around the cocoon and seal you in at the peak. And the flyers are like little fishes that fly all around and just eat up all that juicy luminosity. And most people's energy goes up to about their heels because they're just here to be fed off, right? They're just watching CNN and they're just shoving in the thing unconsciously. And so this thing just gets to just take their energy all day and night. And so if you become disciplined enough to live, if there's a particular way of living where the flyers find your energy unpalatable because you're disciplined. And they just don't enjoy your taste anymore. It's like you create a bitter taste to them because you aren't just giving your energy away. And so that's the way you heal.
And is that through the magical passes? Is that through diet? Is that through meditation? Like what are the practices that render us unpalatable?
Yeah, so our internal dialogue is constantly going, and however you can get it to be less and less and less and less, there's a way to live in silence. It's called silent knowledge, and you don't have to be talking to yourself. But everything gets really magical, and it's kind of ungrounding to be just in that constant mushroom-like state. And some people eat mushrooms and they don't get silent in their mushroom trip either. So it's not, you know, it's okay. But the reality is that that mind that's constantly running isn't yours. it's like a radio channel that won't turn off.
Right.
So when you can turn it off, because you're so in love with watching birds, or you're so fascinated at a movie that you're just so focused, you're just like so into it, right? You're silent. There's a way to live that way. And then you, so yeah, the magical passes get me silent. The recapitulation to me is the most powerful thing you can do. And that leads to the greatest levels of silence. But it's terrifying to go into deep, deep levels of silence because you're crossing a threshold of into the unknown. You are not familiar. Like I practice gazing and the world, it moves because my eyes cross when I get silent. And then I get to see the world almost like it's overlaid. I'll be in the woods, but all of a sudden there's like a castle. Like another dimension is overlaid inside of this one. And I can almost get up and walk into that castle. Someday I'll be able to. Like Carlos walked on a bridge made of fog. So shamans do really cool stuff with their time on Earth, and they slow it all down because they're not like in autopilot at all. So it's constant pattern breaks. You have to stalk yourself. You have to know your domesticated ways. So I'll be out on the deck at night and I'm really tired and I need to go to bed. And I'm like, well, what if I went out and onto the land in the dark alone and just sat there tired and not get went to bed? Like, what if I just do something that doesn't make sense to my body but makes sense to my spirit? Just to come out of the heavy patterns of just always doing the normal thing. And that's just somehow getting to the point where we're just being really honest with what that's going to take. And sometimes it's huge stuff in order to really be honest with what do you really want to be doing with the rest of your time, and how are you going to free yourself from those patterns?
And does this create conflict within your primary relationship when you're attuned to your spirit and acting out of pattern or conditioning just in a way that's authentic to you?
For sure. I mean, it's not easy to create a lifestyle in which you can be that creative, and it is very challenging to then coexist, right? Because of the compromises. But
Exactly.
if you're following signs and omens, then and you've been shown to work with this person, then you'll always be shown how to do it all.
Okay.
Always solutions to everything. And but we wear blinders. We only see the ones in front of us or that we have experience with. Those blinders could come off, but those blinders are based on the past. So they come from way behind and they project way forward in a very linear way. But like, one of Carlos's assignments was to leave his money, his home, and go start over with no money, with nothing, and get a job and beg for a place to live and just see what spirit. What kind of opportunities open up? The universe is magical. And it will, when like Carlos also would say, just walk out your front door and don't come back until you've completely changed. Just walk for days. Just walk and walk and walk. And, I used to do things like this. So I have a lot of freedom. I was hitchhiking all over the country when I was 16, and it was dangerous in the late 90s to hitchhike, but I was guided and all kinds of incredible things happen. So luckily my partner, my wife, she introduced me to this material, right?
Really?
Yeah. So I met her when I was 16, she was 20, and we were just friends for a long time. But then in order to get out of the, we got out of the same cult and went into another cult. And in that cult, we ended up getting together, having children. We raised our kids in very alternative environments. Not ideally, we wish we had done things different. Well, we don't regret, but we wouldn't have done this. There's a lot of things we wouldn't do the same. But we got sent into those places and learned a lot. And she's very advanced in areas that I'm not, and I'm very advanced in areas she's not. And that's challenging to just like, oh my God, we're just so not compatible at times. But at the same time, like, that's what keeps that tension and that intensity. And we, in a way, things have never been better. And yet, now that they're better, we're realizing all the dysfunctional things that have been a part of, in place all along. So it's very, very challenging.
That's incredible that you guys have been together since you were 16, she was 20. Wow, that's so rare,
Yeah,
especially in
and
this
well,
culture.
yeah, and there was a couple separations, and so it's been messy, but we found our way back to each other, and it's not guaranteed. We're just doing our best, to truly get honest with ourselves. And communication is, if we didn't learn and help and work with a third party, we find and we if we would have waited for somebody to be perfect to get help, we would have never got help. So finding people that are good at teaching communication, and that's what I do. I work with couples now. I help them to communicate with each other. And it seems so simple, the things that I bring up, but it's so confronting.
Totally. Yeah. And people are operating with fear of disappointment or triggering the other person or not being liked or, all those things that keep people from authentically expressing in real time.
It's amazing to watch the healing though when people show up for themselves, because really that's all you're doing. You think you're doing it for them, but and this idea that we fall in love with someone, it's actually not like that. Like if you get to the root of it, it's just we're seeking to be loved, and that's it. And so if we can get honest about that and get to the wound, instead of creating a Disneyland storyline or let the Hollywood stuff kind of hijack your awareness of what it really is. But at the same time, I try to get people to come out of the rabbit holes and go watch a movie that'll make them cry because they've gotten so focused on the heavy stuff. So it's just like, oh, we're just in this world, we don't need to know everything. And in fact, information is really heavy. So I give all the information I consume, I give it back to the mother. And ask her to just only give me the stuff I need.
May I ask how you do that?
Yeah, a lot of movement and shaking and yelling and screaming and crying and kicking and punching. One time I did a mock suicide because I was in so much pain and I dug a shallow grave and I put a knife to my throat and pretended I was going to end it. And I felt a force show up and try to get me to plunge that thing in. Like it was so intense. But I was able to then go to the ground as if I had done that, go into the grave. And I couldn't cry. I was so numb because my girlfriend at the time had just died suddenly. And
Whoa.
I was able to then fake cry. I was told to fake cry once I got in there. And then the fake tears led to, or the fake crying led to the real tears. And then I felt the mother start pulling all my pain out of me and all this pain just came, out in such a strong amount. And I was told not to just get up after that, to stay there until she filled me back up, because that was my fuel. I was running on pain, and I wouldn't have been able to get out of there if I had not waited until she gave me fresh energy. I walked out of there floating, because the Earth Mother is real. And once a person, sometimes we think things are negative that happen, but they're actually trying to get us to rock bottom so we could get to the mother.
How long were you in the grave?
I mean, I think it was like a 40-minute thing, and I was able to release a lot of pain and then pick up the energy that, it was really fairly quick.
Well, that practice seems rather extreme and beautiful. I think it's good advice given the current information propaganda space and how dark and opaque and confusing it is. Like, just with this past week and the Iran stuff, for me as a journalist, I hit the wall and I'm like, I'm not putting my attention on this. It feels so toxic. I don't even want to see it. I don't have an opinion. I don't know anything about it. They're all liars. I just want to be in nature at this point.
Good. See, that's good, because it needs to get to overwhelm to the point where we have to just stop paying attention, and you can adjust your career accordingly and just speak to that. Speak like you are now. We just keep pivoting because it's gonna get really overwhelming if we don't come out of that stuff. Like the Russian dreamers I worked with, they are not tapped into any of that. Their neighbors have to tell them, what's going on, and so they get to do the coolest things with their attention.
Yeah. Everything's so much better when I'm just focused on what's real for me in the here and now. And I'm like, wow, I'm living a miracle. Everything's beautiful.
Yeah, totally. For sure. Yeah.
So you mentioned in the shamanic realm and working with shamans so that they're not above, they're not below. I've been doing medicine ceremonies for decades, and I was also really entrenched in the Los Angeles yoga scene for a while.
Wow.
And when there were these coordinated takedowns of different yoga teachers and spiritual leaders around me too, which seemed so fake to me, I just
Right.
thought, well, this is how it always happens. And I think it's human nature when we put people on pedestals. And I think so many people, because they'll have really life-changing, revelatory experiences that are guided by shamans, it's easy to put the shamans on a pedestal. And then I just think, as human nature, it's very challenging when people are putting us on pedestals to keep ourselves humble. So is that what you see going on in the shamanic communities?
Totally, yeah. And everyone gets hurt in that process. The person on the pedestal, and then the person that put the person on, or the people that allowed that to happen. So, it is the responsibility of each person to not do that, not let others do that to you, because that would be very ungrounding to be on a pedestal. It's just, you're not on the ground. You're
Completely.
literally floating off other people's thoughts and feelings of you. Now, when you're of service and you're helping people heal, this incredible gift comes in directly from source. You get all these incredible feelings, and you realize you're part of something, and you're kind of, it's like you're like getting credits for the afterlife or something. You're being shown that if you keep doing this, that you're going to be provided for in a beautiful way. Not it's not about the merchant mind, like the money thing. It's just about, if I can, if I don't get lost, I can really do some really powerful work, and I can be supported. So that's the trick, is just the trusting and the listening and the guidance that comes with that. Because and so I'm very careful with that. I don't let people do that with me, and I'm speak to my flaws primarily. I speak to the areas that I'm wounded. I speak of the fact that I'm a novice, but I just have a unique way of talking about these things. There's people way more advanced than me in this work, and I go into their worlds, and then I expose their egos, and they kick me out of their groups for life. And it's really sad, because I'm trying to get in there and stay there, because there's people that would benefit from hearing my perspective, because what they're telling their students to do is dangerous. And I'm trying to bring in something realistic and practical, because Toltecs are not spiritual. They're just practical and magical. And there needs to be practical pieces applied to the spiritual community. And most spiritual communities are based on old traditions. And they're no longer, Don Juan said, be of your time.
I'm writing that down. I love that. The Castaneda books were probably my earliest. First, it was the Tao Te Ching that just cracked me open. And then I found the Castaneda books, and that I just kind of went and ran with it as well. So when you're in these communities and, holding up a mirror to people's spiritual ego, is that something that you're trying to do? Is that just part of your nature?
Yeah, I've been in a lot of cults, and it's I help break cults up. I go in as a willing student to learn, but then I see all the stuff, and I'm not afraid to point it out. But I was in the, I stayed too long at times, and I got beat up. It's really easy to do, to just point out the things, and it's, most people are so defensive that their ego's just quickly exposed, and they're all over. There's so many of them. And yeah, so it's kind of intense. But no, I don't like choose to do that for fun, or like, it's, I get guided, into areas. But it's tricky, because I've pissed off some very powerful people, and there's consequences, energetic consequences. I've had to learn how to really take care of myself in weird ways that I wouldn't have had to learn. But yeah, it's all what it is. I wish there was a way to continue in those communities. I wish I didn't get kicked out because the conversations would just get amazing if people would just stay in there. But it's kind of like the media or whatever, where they just make sure that those ideas don't get heard. Even in the alternative media, the really evolutionary stuff gets pushed out.
Totally. I can relate to everything that you're saying because I have a similar makeup where like I love these communities, I'm getting so much value, and something I say is taken in a weird way or triggers the wrong person. So at this point, I know with communities, it's pretty much just a matter of time before I'm gonna piss off a head honcho and get kicked out.
Totally. Yeah. It's funny. That's good. It's important. I think it's some of us are just called to that line of work in a sense. It's part of being a mirror. And that's what makes me a good mentor is I'm not afraid to tell people what I see when they come to me for help. And they don't want to hear it, but it's actually relieving once they or if I can get past their armor and I can actually get them to feel it, that's what makes them pop. And I was lucky to have teachers that got me to pop. Because we all have stuff that's stuck. And a lot of it's like real powerful anger. Like a lot of women avoid their anger. And they're thinking they're in a just in gratitude and they're just manifesting and everything's okay. But you can tell there's just unresolved rage. And we just got to get to the place where we have an outlet for that. Like I love construction. I can yell the word fuck as loud as I want on the job site. It's welcomed. Because if I let that frustration stay, I'm probably gonna like hit somebody with a forklift on accident because I'm not really like taking care of my emotions.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. I'm definitely a student of rage, no question, which is why I play racquetball because it's a really great outlet for me. But I
Okay.
notice in our culture there isn't a lot of allowing for female rage. It's not okay here.
Know. Yeah, it scares men. Men are scared of powerful women, and for reasons, because women have an advantage in the witch realm, in the power realm. That's why you don't go in the lodge with women when they're menstruating, because they can open doors and all kinds of things happen when in native communities. So there's a deep fear of the power of the female, and so that's why we're dealing with such a The patriarch is so powerful right now because the non-human forces that are controlling this place, make sure that that pendulum swings, right? So there was a time where women took advantage of men in the spiritual side of things and enslaved them. So we're just inside of like that's what I say is there's only two tribes, the tribe of man and the tribe of woman. And if those two tribes could learn to work together, then we wouldn't be in this predicament anymore.
Yeah, I just got a chill when you said that. I was very vocal around the Me Too stuff, and I really haven't shut up about it because it seems like the push is for female supremacy and kicking men to the curb. And
Totally.
I'm just not a fan of hierarchy. And until we recognize that we're equals, we're independent, we lift each other up, we support one another, it's not gonna work.
Yep. No, it sucks because there's no way to truly connect to be vulnerable to the point that we need to in order to have a relationship for one, if we're putting ourselves above or below, right? I used to put women above, I just did, and that kept me a little boy, and I was disempowering to myself, right? So these things, but I thought that was the thing I had to do in order to get laid, basically, was behave that way. But it totally is something that is uncomfortable to be able to admit to now and to be coming out of, because I could have spent my whole life like just enjoying myself without needing to act in that way that was just a disservice to myself and to women. But it is what it is. I'm lucky to have figured it out now. And so we just all have to get to know those pieces of our patterning and why does it keep playing out the same way? I've been in a long-term relationship, but we still cycle through old patterns and then we recognize them and heal them and keep, making these adjustments. And it's not easy. It would seem be easier to go find someone else and start with a fresh slate, but your shit follows you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it seems like When you were speaking earlier about, being in cults or spiritual communities and people not being welcoming of those reflections, I think it really shows us like who's in this for power, status, or ego, and who really wants to develop our spirit and integrate and become whole, because that is a humbling process, and it's also very loving for those around us to show us where we're full of shit. It's easier to not say anything, but and as confronting as uncomfortable it is, it's like, great, thank you for helping me see where I can integrate another piece.
And my wife's very good at seeing the shadow in things, and so she points out all the parts of me that I'm not looking at, and not always in the best way, but we're getting better at it, and so these are just incredible teachers, the people that we spend the most time with, or the people that teach us the most, really, and just being able to recognize, that we've probably worked with these same people over and 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 over in so many ways, and it's just being able to really appreciate that, and just instead of just like, ghost people, or just like, if you're gonna bring closure, like do it in the most honorable way, like cry together and say goodbye and like really show up for each other, and just become mature even in the breakup. Like you never know what could be the thing that actually heals you. It's often in the breakup that the healing happens, and then the potential with the time and the space makes it possible. But because people just don't honor those relationships, they often jump into other ones, and then they get so lost. And it's just when they're really old, does it all hit them, all the regret or the resentment or whatever. But there's a way to work through this stuff now so that we aren't overwhelmed when we get elderly. And because that's why people, I think they say Alzheimer's is because of this or that. It has to do with whether you recapitulate or not. It has to do with how much joy you're having. It's your youthful energy is going to be come back to you when you die. And so you just want to be prepared for that jolt, and you can make room for all this stuff to resurface, and you won't lose your marbles when you get elderly if you've done the work.
I really appreciate you saying that, because a close relative of mine who, because of a large amount of conflict and dissonance, we're not in contact, but she has developed Alzheimer's. And my instant gut was like, this whole thing was so painful that her brain tapped out. Like, it's not this pathology per se. It felt like a coping mechanism.
Totally. Yeah, the Toltecs talk about an assemblage point, and it moves, so Toltecs can go under the other worlds, because on the outside of their luminous cocoon is this ball of light, and if it moves to other locations, then you can actually, that's our perceptual travel mechanism. So when we go to sleep, that assemblage point moves all over the place. And when we start to get old, that assemblage point starts to move. And it's preparing you for death. And so if you understand that that's what's going on, there are practices, and the Castaneda material really can explain a way to ensure that you don't get lost, as you start to become more energetic, because we're physical, and then as we get old, we become more like energy. We're about to transfer it. We're going to become an inorganic energy. Right now, we're organic, and that transference can be so beautiful, or it could just be absolute horror.
That does it for the first half of my conversation with blah, blah, blah. That does it for the first half of my conversation with Joel Schaefer. As you are inspired to tune in and hang out with us for the second half of our conversation, you can find it over on my Locals and my Patreon communities. Those addresses are dannykatz.locals.com and patreon.com/DannyKatz. At both of my membership communities, for as little as $5 a month, you get access to all of my second half conversations, plus advance notice of courses, webinars, bonus content, special discounts, et cetera, et cetera. So choose whichever platform feels most aligned for you. Maybe even support me at both, because abundance is awesome. Sharing is caring, and I certainly appreciate your support. Just to give you a lay of the land, my Words with Emily and Danny show is available for my $10 and higher supporters at both my Patreon and Locals community. So you can make an educated decision as to what level feels best to support me on. If you're not feeling aligned with the membership community, I do offer my second half conversations for one-time $5 donations. So as that interests you, please email me through my website to arrange. And thank you so much for supporting me, because it really does mean the world and it really helps me in keeping on with putting out podcasts and videos and this kind of content. So if you are getting any value whatsoever, thank you for supporting me. Last call to sign up for my newsletter at dannykatz.com, and let's wrap it up. Thank you so much for sharing your sacred attention with me. Thank you for remembering that every word matters, that you are omniscopic amazingness. I will see you over on the Locals and the Patreon. Have a rockin' day.